Family life is essential. Jim and I are on a mission to help you live the best one. You'll hear personal stories from thought leaders of strengths and struggles with proven strategies to help you make the most of your 18 summers. I'm your co-host, Jamie Shields.
Hey guys, welcome back to one of my favorite parts of the week, and that is 18 Summers Candid Conversations. As you know, we're always trying to bring support and stability to family, especially in this crazy time of the pandemic crisis. And I was introduced to Dr. Eric Cole by a very good mutual friend of ours, and he has an impressive background that I know has definitely been something that I'm trying to do with my family in this time of cybersecurity. And he has more than 30 years of networked experience. He's a distinguished cybersecurity expert and a keynote speaker. He helps organizations all over the world with cyber threats, and he's going to be doing the same thing for our family lives. He's worked with a variety of clients from Fortune 500 companies, top banks, the CIA, and he's been featured on all different media outlets from CNN, CBS News, Fox News, and 60 Minutes. So Dr. Cole, Eric, thank you for being here today with us. I really appreciate it. I think your message is going to be very important, especially in what we're going through today.
It's my pleasure, and thank you for having me.
No, you're welcome. Can you tell me, Eric, how did you get into cybersecurity? Because it sounds so, James Bondish, and we all deal with it every day, but how did you get into it?
So sort of the short version is, I always loved computers, and I was majoring in computer science in college, and this was back in the 80s, the late 80s, early 90s, and I wasn't sure if that's what I really wanted to do. So yeah. I went down to the co-op office to say, hey, I'd like to do a co-op, and it turned out the CIA was recruiting. So I interviewed with the CIA, and I actually got a job in networking, in building out their network operations center at the CIA, and I was in a big meeting with executives, and I asked a simple question that changed my life. And that question was this: how do we know these applications that we're deploying are secure? Because this was when we started putting things out on the internet. It was just when the web was starting to get popular. And they said, how do we know what they're secure? And they said, okay, Eric, thank you for volunteering to solve that problem. And I said, I wasn't volunteering, I was just asking. But they're like, no, you need to do that. And it turns out there is no way to prove a system is secure. There is no way to validate it. All you can do is trying to break it and find weaknesses known as hacking. So I began my career as a cybersecurity professional in 91, where for 7 years, I was a professional hacker for the CIA. They wow. trained me, and I was responsible for figuring out how to break in and compromise any computer, any technology that's out there. And what I learned is, if it's a computer and it has internet access, it's hackable. And the funny thing about it is, after 7 years, I got bored, because wow. breaking in is easy. It's simple, but securing and protecting is much more difficult. So I left the CIA and I began my career as an entrepreneur, building security companies that really helps make cyberspace safe. And one of the reasons why, when I was introduced to you, I really felt like we connected and bonded, because my whole thing is, I want to make cyberspace a safe place to live, work, and raise a family. To me, yeah. family is really important. And we have all this tech out there that we're giving our kids, we're giving ourselves, and we have no idea that we might be putting them at risk and not even realizing it.
Yeah, let's talk about that, Eric, because I know you and I have had side conversations that I like to bring to the whole community. We have been brought home for work, for family, for school, all together now, and technology has obviously had a big turn on. I mean, Zoom has never been a more popular word. It's almost more popular than the word Google now. Yeah. But what are your concerns seeing that? Because there are some concerns with that much turning into the technology. What are your concerns for your own family, and what do you think other parents should be concerned about?
My biggest concern is everybody working from home and kids having virtual schools. We are taking our lives and really transforming them into cyberspace, where we're living our entire lives online. Our kids wake up in the morning and they immediately log in for their school, for their teachers. We're doing the same thing with work. But then here's the problem. We get so used to that as a way to operate that we then run our families that way. I kid you not. The other day, I'm in my home office and my kids are upstairs and I get a Zoom connection from them. And I'm like, what? And my daughter's like, hey, Dad, we just want to talk to you. about what's for dinner and what we're going to order and this and that, because we're each taking turns making dinner. And I'm going on, and after 5 minutes, I'm like, wait a second, get your butts down here. Let's talk in person. But we're actually using the tech. And here you have this case where families are now disconnecting because we're so used to connecting online. We're so used to working remotely. I've seen cases with neighbors where they said they sit at the dinner table and everyone's got the cell phone in one hand as they're eating. And to me, technology is good, but it cannot replace social interaction, face-to-face, hugging, talking, and things like that. So I just get very concerned, and I saw it in my family, where we're now so addicted to this technology that we're actually not interacting the way that we should. So a couple things that we do is every evening, we have 2 hours where everyone's cell phone, and mine too, we put them on the counter in the kitchen. And we don't have anything planned, but here's the funniest thing. Sometimes you might sit together and read. Sometimes you might go for a walk. Sometimes you might play a board game. But what you find is as soon as you disconnect from that tech, all of a sudden you start bonding with each other. And I tell you, those 2 hours since we started doing that, we've seen less fights, less anger, less frustration with everything going on. And we actually started growing as a family, which I think is really important, because tech can actually destroy families if we're not careful.
Isn't that funny? And that's what I loved about you and I being introduced on that core value, where we love technology, but as a cybersecurity expert, one of your biggest concerns is having it open too much, which is all telling to me, because you've been on all sides of it. And I loved what you said about that. We actually right now are doing a mealtime challenge, and we actually do the exact same as you, 5:30 to 7:30. Once in a while, if work's going over, we'll do 6 to 8, but for 2 hours, we are screen silent, no phones, no news, nothing. And it's almost like I saw you go, it's a decompression.
Exactly.
And almost people say, well, what do you do for 2 hours? And we say, at first you might look around and go, this is a little weird. It's almost creepy, but you know, it almost returns to what's right in front of you. And that's so important. And we're telling people right now, Eric, is like, okay, 2 hours, fine. You and I have really worked hard on this. That's how we were brought together. But start with 30 minutes, even 30 minutes, because there was an interesting quote that I came across. I don't know if we talked about it the other day. The average dinner time 60 years ago was 90 minutes. In today's world, this was from a few months ago, a big polling that was done, the average dinner, 12 minutes.
Whoa. Okay.
And when you look at it, they're usually rushing back to something, a thread, a game, something like that. So I'm not saying there's not a time and a place and you have to completely shut off from these things. But if you create these spaces, like you said, just this completely, I'm off, everybody's off at the same time. I think, like you said, conversation will happen. There might be more jokes. It's not scripted, like there has to be a game or has to be, but there's an availability that creates in the different flows of different days, those deeper conversations, the more planning of adventures, the awareness of what's right in front of you.
Exactly.
So, and tell me a little bit, you'd said something, because I talk about tech fasting as well, where I like to, you know, I'll go blank for those 2 hours. I'll go blank from spending the afternoon with one of my children. But you were talking about something you do for whole weekends. Tell me a little bit about that and why you do it.
Yeah, so once a month, we do a tech-free weekend. Yeah. And it's everyone in the family. It's funny. It's everyone in the house. If my kids want to have friends over during a tech-free weekend, they can. But I tell the kids, and if they're younger, I tell the parents, listen, here's what we do. And if your kids are coming to our house for the weekend, they can't have their cell phone. So you can have the home phone if there's an emergency, but this is how we operate. Some parents love it, some hate it. But the way we do it is starting at 5 p.m. on Friday till 8 a.m. on Monday, there's no tech. No cell phones. There's no computers. There's no TV. We sort of, my kids joke, my youngest daughter carries candles. She calls it Daddy's Amish time, because it's like we're going back to Amish, but it's no tech at all. And I'll tell you what happens. Saturday morning, the adults have the harder time with it, because like we're running a business. We're like, what if somebody needs us? And I'll admit to you, the first time or two we did it, I snuck the tech a little bit. It wasn't fair, but I did it. But your kids will wake up Saturday and they're going to test you out a little bit and be like, are you really doing this? And they're going to be a little mad at you. But what I find is by about 2 or 3 o'clock, they start to recognize the reality. and they start to get back to who they are, and they start to come out of their cages. So usually by two or three, the first couple times you do it, they come out and start talking and say, hey, do you want to play badminton? Do you want to go for a run? Do you want to do this? And then I find that Saturday night, it's always different because we do it every month, but I find my kids, my wife and myself laughing like we've never laughed because we're just having fun, enjoying each other, being silly. We played charades one time, just crazy. And then Sunday, you get up and whatever beliefs you have, we usually go to church. And then Sunday afternoon, we usually just either go outside, go for a picnic or do something. And I will tell you, by the time Sunday night comes around, we're all different people. We actually, you can see just the relief, the stress. My daughters are so big on the Snapchat and their streaks and all that other stuff. They're always stressed out. And the fact that their friends know they're off for 2 days, they're different people. And I wish I could do it longer, but the world doesn't allow it. And then it's funny, you go back Monday morning, and unfortunately by Tuesday or Wednesday, you start seeing a lot of the stress and pain and other factors come back again. It's something I would like to get to the point where we do every weekend, but just with kids' sports, business, and others, it's not practical. So we're doing once a month now, which I look at, you know, something is a lot better than once a year. So you got to make progress.
I think it's huge. And so many people don't do it. They see, and again, that sees your tolerance going up because so many people go, I couldn't do it once a month. You're already talking about once a week. But what that tells me is you've seen good results for your family. Your career has not been hurt. Those fears, probably when you're like, oh man, I got a lot on my plate right now. Business is going to fall apart, but probably it never has quite to the degree you built up in your mind.
Exactly. It never does. And what I find is I'm actually so much more refreshed and happy, engaged with my family. Those Monday and Tuesdays after the tech-free weekends, I am so much more focused. I get more done on those 2 days that I do the entire month because you have a new alignment in how you look about and think about the business. And the other interesting thing about it is some of my biggest connections, interviews, and people I now call friends, I actually met because they heard about my tech-free weekend and they're like, Eric, I respect you so much. I want to find out more about it. So what ends up happening is it helps you a lot more than it hurts you. And then the final thing I like to say with that, and hopefully no one gets too mad at me, but if you can't give up your tech for 48 hours, if you can't put it down and you must look at it, you have a serious addiction. Yeah. And addictions, whether it's alcohol and drugs is what we most think of with addictions. But tech to me is an addiction that causes more damage and more impact than any alcohol or any drug causes at such a large mass to the population.
I think you're right. I think this has been it really wasn't something our parents dealt with. And I would say, and I don't have any stats behind this, you know, when I grew up in Northeast, I think drinking was a lot heavier of a problem. And it's still out there, of course. But I believe, like you said, the new addiction is technology because that's the dopamine, the dopamine hit real quick. That's the one that can be snuck. Like you said, I can go in the bathroom real quick and check this thing, get my dopamine hit. And I can be parked at the traffic light and get that and pretend I need to look this up now and get wrapped up. But the problem is, like you said, if you can't stop, that's what an addiction is, something that is unhealthy for you and you want more of. And we in our community talk about that pretty openly. I know it's not popular right now, but I think it's needed. And again, I always find it interesting from someone on the inside where your job is to protect people from cyber. And you're saying, well, it's not just the hackers, it's the overusage. And again, I know that's why we were brought together for your tech-free weekends and our tech fasts. But with moving on to the cybersecurity itself, we could not be more aligned with that. And I love the thing of the tech-free weekends, and I would call them tech fests. I think we're probably due for one right now because the last few weeks, and parents are beating themselves up, themselves, their kids, they've been over it. So I love the idea. In fact, I'm going to do a committed action where I'm going to do a tech fast weekend again. So thank you very much.
Awesome.
Yeah, I love it. And I'll get my teens to come along with a big grumpy look on their face. But I appreciate you setting that to me. But another thing that's been coming to us, Eric, from is the, we're on the technology more. You and I were joking with the people hacking into to Zoom. And I think I told you last year, I had a really scary incident for me. One of a close family client of mine contacted me on an awkward Friday and just said, "Hey, were you on such and such a site talking to Jake?" And I said, "I've never even heard of that site. What are you talking about?" Well, it ended up someone was posing as me. There were pictures of our families together. They could see I was a family friend. And someone was, I guess, as they call grooming, a 12-year-old boy trying to get to him, posing as me. I mean, I had never heard of the site. We called the police. I mean, nothing happened. So these are the concerns now that we're home more and we're handing off the technology. Some parents are getting busy and saying, just fine, get on your laptop, get on your phone, that's fine. How should parents be more aware of the dangers out there? This might not be to the security level where you're protecting huge companies, but the individual enterprise of our family, how do we protect them more?
First and foremost, it's we all have to recognize that no matter who we are, what we do, where we live, we all are targets. I hear so many people going, "Eric, I just have a regular job. I don't have a lot of money. We just live in a rural area. No one's going to target me. No one's going to target our kids. I don't have to worry about cybersecurity." And that's probably the biggest mistake you can make, because today's cyber criminals, that's who they want to go after. They're not going to go after the movie stars and the real famous folks, because they know they have cyber protection. They have bodyguards. They have those types of things. They're going to go after me and you who are just posting things online and either targeting our children or targeting us financially. So first thing is recognize that you and your children are a target and cybersecurity is your responsibility. The next thing you want to do is talk to your kids about the dangers. Use examples. If you go to onlinedanger.com, I have a lot of examples. I can give you several of them. But like, for example, I sit down with my kids and I say, "Listen, when you're in your room and you're working on your computer, you need to cover up your camera." And I give him a real case in Pennsylvania where a school district gave out 200 computers. And it turned out 3 months later that the vice principal installed monitoring software and was turning on the cameras in the kids' bedrooms at night and watching their activity as they were changing, showering, and things like that. And I wish I could tell you this is a one-off, but I could give you hundreds of these examples. So we just have to make our kids more aware. We teach our kids when they're 3 or 4, don't talk to strangers, don't get in a car. And then we give them a cell phone and never teach them about cybersecurity. So we really need to almost scare them a little bit on the realities of the world we live in and make them aware of the dangers. The second thing that's very important is any social media that your children are on, you need to be friends with them. You need to monitor them and you need to watch them. And I remember a mom, I was speaking at a PTA meeting and she came up to me afterwards and said, "Eric, I don't want to see what my daughter's posting. I don't want to see what my daughter's saying." And it embarrassed me. And I looked at her and said, "So you're willing to let the rest of the world see this side of your daughter, but you're not?" And it was like her eyes got open, because this is public information and we need to recognize it's out there. And then one final thing that's really, really important is colleges are using social media to do cyber background checks. So they're checking our children. So do you realize that if your child does one inappropriate picture, even if it's a joke holding a beer or doing something inappropriately, that one picture could cause your child not to get accepted to the college of their choice? And I'm always a big data person. So real quick, do you realize 27% of children do not get into the college of their choice because of cyber background checks, because of something they did online and the college is just not willing to take a risk on them? So these are things that are not jokes anymore. They can hurt your child and put them at risk.
Wow, so I'm gonna repeat that because I didn't know that. So you're saying 27% of like entering college students can be rejected from the school they wanted to go to because of social media background check?
Yes.
Wow. I mean, and see, most people, and I love that you give the data on that, because I guarantee listening to this, and even I might have been a few years ago before I started to get more into this, they're like, "Oh, you're talking about a 1 in a million. You're talking about like the odds of like an alien abduction. That's not gonna happen." Whether with the grooming or someone pretending to be something, but it happens a lot more than we really want to look at.
Exactly. And just another one, because I'm all about the data right now, because we're dealing with COVID-19 and lockdown. Do you realize, and we just checked this, so this is accurate of 3 hours ago, but 71% of the emails that you're receiving from third parties dealing with COVID-19 are malicious. They're actually spam, they're scam, they're not. So if you're getting these emails about protecting your family or coworkers infected with these links, and these emails look a little strange, resist the temptation, because almost 75% of these are cyber attacks trying to break into your computer and steal your identity.
So that's the goal. They want you to get, they send that type of hot off the press type of thing that's going to draw you in. And then their goal is for you to click, and then the virus enters your computer and pulls all your personal data. Is that kind of the overall hunt that these people are trying to do?
Yes. For adults, the idea is to get control of your computer, to get your passwords, get your financial information, get things that they can use to steal money from your account. And the interesting thing is, they don't want to steal $10 million from one person. They want to steal $10 from a million people. So most people don't even notice it, because it's such a small amount. And then for children, what most of the time they're trying to do is to either get friends with your child or to get to know them, is they ultimately want to get a physical address of your child so they can either stalk them or abduct them. And once again, these are not one in a million. This is happening a lot more often than most parents want to realize or accept.
Yeah, and it's time for awareness. That's exactly why we did this interview, because I wanted people to hear hard data. This is not just something, like you said, with that the stars would be dealing with, or just large Fortune 500 companies. This is the average Joe. This is the average people like you and I, living and doing our best to work, career, family. But we're more the targets than the others, because we're more vulnerable.
Exactly, and we don't think we're a target, which means our defenses are down. We're not locking our virtual front doors. We're not keeping ourselves safe. So it makes it much easier for them to target us.
Yeah. Well, again, Candid Conversations is what we call our podcast, as you know, Eric. And this has been one of the most enlightening for me, because tech is such a big conversation. First of all, coming from cybersecurity, I love the fact that you have that value going, I like tech, but too much of it is bad. And I will take control of my family and be the leader of them. And we're going to have times where it's not available to us. And secondly, you're opening the eyes to our community of the grooming, the identity theft. It is prevalent, and you are a target. So you want to be aware. And why would you ever give your kids the social media outlets without involvement? For me, it's like saying, here, we're going away for the weekend. Here's the key to the liquor cabinet, but don't do anything wrong. We'll check on you on Monday. And so that's just, it's so important to do that. So I appreciate you sharing those stats. And again, for success in the future, you and I didn't have to deal with that. We had the old Kodak things, and it took 6 weeks to develop, and it wasn't put out to millions of people. They have a different responsibility today, kids. And we try to say fair or not, this is how it is today. And you're able to connect in more ways, but you're also more visible. And that can be a good or bad thing at this time.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'd like to ask you, Eric, one of our closing question of kind of how our podcast works for Candid Conversations is, I call it the 75-year-old self. I've gotten really serious about trying to imagine myself at the age of 75. That's 30 years in the future for me. You know, hopefully I'm still surfing. I have some hair and, you know, enjoying family. But I think it's going to be a wiser, better version of me. And I like to ask people, what do you think, what advice would your 75-year-old self give to Eric of today?
Wow, that's a great question. And I wasn't ready for it, but what I like about it is it'll be the spontaneous answer.
Yeah,
it probably would be, because just so you know, I just turned 50. So I have a few years on you. So that's 25.
Not many. Yeah.
It's 25 years for me. It would probably be, stop being afraid and worry about what other people think, and just jump and live your true purpose. Because even at 50, I've done a lot, but there's still a lot of big goals that I have. And I sometimes sort of talk myself out of it or say, what would this person think, or what would that person think? And I think what they would tell me is, without being obnoxious or offensive to others, stop worrying about what other people think, live your dream, jump take chances. And if you make mistakes, you make mistakes, but live with no regret and don't get the 75 saying, I wish I did all these things.
Love it. See, I'm glad I didn't tell you that I was going to ask that question.
Exactly.
That was a phenomenal answer. And I'm sure anyone from age 5 listening to this to 74 probably will. I know I can identify with that. Move forward. Don't care what other people think. Live your dream. Accept the mistakes. I mean, that is well said. So, Eric, I look up to your work. I appreciate the values you set, especially with your tech-free weekends and the work you do in cybersecurity, because I know that protects not only entrepreneurs, large businesses, and families, but it has results for me personally as well. So I really appreciate you spending the time to be on here. We wish you and your family safety and wellness through this pandemic that I think will pass. And I appreciate you sharing your wisdom, because I know that's going to help a lot of people.
And thank you so much for having me on the show. And also thank you for everything you're doing with 18 Summers, because that's definitely a mission that needs to be pushed.
I appreciate that. Well, we'll talk again, and you know, let's stay in touch through this whole thing.
Sounds great.
All right. Thanks, Eric.
Take care.
Thanks for joining the 18 Summers podcast and putting your family in priority position. Subscribe and leave a review and help other families just like you.